Welcome to the Quilt Fiction Podcast. I'm your host, Frances O'Rourke Dowell.
Hello. Welcome back to returning listeners. If you're new, did you know I've podcasted an entire novel, Friendship Album 1933? Give it a listen while it's still available for free on iTunes. Longtime listeners are already well familiar with Eula Baker, Milton Falls' favorite farm wife. In today's story, she's still Eula Jean Rhodes, an 18-year-old farm girl who's in no hurry to get married, even though people are starting to wonder if it isn't time for Eula to walk down the aisle. Before we begin, I want to mention a few things. For those of you wondering what's going on with Friendship Album 1933, right now I'm discussing the project with agents and in the process of revising. I'll let you know what happens. In the meantime, I'll be publishing occasional stories here, many about the characters you've come to know through Friendship Album 1933. If you need some more quilt fiction right this very minute, have you read my books Birds in the Air or Margaret Goes Modern? Both are available via online retailers, and I hope that audiobooks will be available for sale in the not-too-distant future. Okay, on with the podcast. A quick FYI. Today's story, Picnic Basket, takes place in 1902. One thing you should know to help you keep perspective is that a 1902 dollar would be worth almost $30 today. You'll understand later why I've mentioned this. All right, on with the story. Picnic Basket, a Friendship Album story. Eula, 1902. Walking down the hall to her brother's room, her arms filled with sheets fresh off the line, Eula Jean Rhodes couldn't stop thinking about the Liberty Star block that she'd been piecing the night before. She'd used striped shirting fabric to make the outer star points, and getting the stripes to go in the same direction had been more of a challenge than she'd anticipated. Still, Eula was glad she'd made the effort. Those stripes gave the star movement, or, as Mother put it, they caused the eye to travel. Eula and her mother spent a great deal of time discussing quilt patterns and fabric choices, usually in the evening when they were done sewing for the day. "You two sound like a couple of college professors," Eula's older sister Delia liked to tease. "It's as though you were working out math equations." "Well, some of it is working out math equations," Mrs. Rhodes would agree. "And some of it has to do with thinking about how colors mix and match and how shapes fit together and work themselves into patterns. I don't reckon that part's math, though. Maybe it's science." Cora, Eula's other older sister, sometimes joined these discussions. She was interested in science and kept a journal in which she recorded observations she made on her morning walks. "Colors and nature never clash," she pointed out to Eula once. "They're a reliable guide when you're pulling fabric for a quilt." All three of the Rhodes girls made quilts, but only Eula was devoted to the task. Delia couldn't sit long enough to make much progress on any quilt she started, but she loved a quilting bee because it meant cakes and pies and gossip and sometimes a dance at the end of a long day's sewing. Cora was a practical quilter. If a quilt got so threadbare it was too shabby to lay across a bed, she got out a pencil and paper and planned a new one, then went into the sugar chest to see what fabrics they had on hand. But if all the quilts were in working order, why then Cora would just as soon read a novel or a book on how to identify birds. Eula loved working on a quilt better than anything she could think of, and at age 18, she was widely regarded as one of the best quilt makers in the county. Between her quilting and her blue ribbon baking, a lot of folks around Homerville, Ohio, wondered why the youngest Rhodes girl hadn't been snatched up by one of the area's eligible young men. But the fact was, Eula had no intention of being snatched up. She liked men well enough, her father in particular, and her three younger brothers in general, at least when they weren't pestering her or wrestling around the quilting frame. But she wasn't sure she wanted to be married. Life in her family's old farmhouse, whether she was kneading dough in the kitchen with her mother, chatting with her sisters as they collected eggs from the hen house, or hanging clothes on the line and looking across the same meadow she'd looked across forever. Well, it was a life full of good work and comforts. She didn't see much reason to leave it. Besides, it appeared that Cora, the oldest of the Rhodes girls, wasn't going to get married, so why should Eula? Delia was set to marry Jason Tribble the following spring, and the nonstop wedding talk had nearly worn Eula out, especially when Delia's friend Charlotte stopped by for a visit, which was a frequent occurrence. The two young women sat in the front room discussing Delia's trousseau and planning every last piece of furniture and crockery for the small house Delia and Jason would live in until they could afford a larger place. As far as Eula was concerned, it was enough to put a girl off marriage until kingdom come. Still, she thought, continuing down the hallway to the boys' room, it was nice to think about how you might fill up a place of your own. What sort of curtains you'd put in the kitchen and the front room, what quilts you'd make for the beds. And she wouldn't mind having a little girl to make clothes for. Eula wasn't particular about clothes for herself, not like Delia, who pored over the pictures in the Modern Priscilla magazine and was always cutting up her dresses to make them more fashionable. But she loved seeing the little girls in church in their white dresses and ribbons. The room that Charlie, Fred, and Frank shared was at the end of the upstairs hallway. Both of the windows had been left open to make way for the cool October breeze. Truth was, there weren't enough breezes in the state of Ohio to erase the fact that a small tribe of boys occupied this space every night. But Eula didn't find the musky smell unpleasant. If she ever did get married, she supposed she could tolerate living with a man well enough. She'd been living with men, and boys, most of her life, and on the whole she found them good company, even if a bit odoriferous. Eula! Delia's voice rang from the bottom of the stairs, pitched to a level of high excitement. Come down quick! Charlotte has some news I think you're going to find very interesting. Eula sighed and set the bundle of sheets on the edge of Frank's bed. Charlotte's news was sure to be some kind of nonsense. Patty Hudson bought 5 new ribbons at the dry goods store. Marla Potts' cat, she had kittens. But if Eula ignored Delia's demands to come downstairs, her sister would stand at the bottom step and caterwaul until Mother came out of the kitchen and complained Delia's yelling was curdling the milk. What is it? Eula asked as she descended the stairs. Did somebody buy a new hat? She followed her sister into the front room, where Charlotte Wiggins sat in a rocking chair next to the window. Morning, Eula, Charlotte greeted her, not looking up from her embroidery hoop. Isn't it a beautiful day? Eula, knowing that anything but the most cursory reply could open up a Pandora's box of endless chatter, nodded. Certainly is. It's the kind of day that makes you long for the scent of wood smoke and the sight of haystacks in the field. Well, I believe both of those things are available to you right this very minute, Eula told her. The hay's been cut and stacked for weeks now. Oh, let me take a little poetic license, Charlotte complained, pulling her needle through the top cloth before setting the hoop down on her lap. What I'm leading up to is the Harvest Festival, which, as you know, is in 2 weeks. Mother is on the planning committee, and usually by now every last detail has been settled. But at yesterday's meeting, Elizabeth Mice... Here, Charlotte turned to Delia and shook her head, as though Elizabeth Mice was a person much discussed between the two of them. Well, she suggested something altogether new and different, and while Mother wasn't at all taken by the idea, the other ladies found it charming. I've got beds to make and bread rising in the kitchen, Eula told Charlotte, so if you could get to the part where this has something to do with me, I'd appreciate it. Charlotte exchanged another look with Delia, then turned back to Eula. Mrs. Mice made 2 proposals, actually. One, that there should be a showing of quilts in the church hall. Of course, I thought of you immediately, although I'm not sure which quilt I'd recommend you bring. The Star of Bethlehem, maybe? Eula shrugged. Maybe, she said, trying to sound like she didn't care one way or another. Which quilt to hang at the festival, if any, was a subject to be mulled over with Mother, not Charlotte Wiggins. Charlotte looked disappointed that Eula wasn't more enthusiastic about her news, but that didn't stop her from continuing. The second proposal also might be to your liking. Mrs. Mice thought it a wonderful idea for the young ladies of the community to bring picnic baskets to be auctioned off to the highest bidder. It's to raise money to refurbish the church pews, you see. They've lost their luster over the years. Eula was flabbergasted. An auction? Who has the money for that sort of thing? Well, that's exactly what Mother said to the other ladies. But Mrs. Mice seems to have everyone under her spell, and all but two of the committee members voted yes. Apparently, several of the ladies have daughters of marrying age, and the auction is seen as a way for the girls to put their culinary talents on display. Again, I thought of you, Eula. Why, if quilts and picnic baskets are the order of the day, you'll be the belle of the ball. Eula set her mouth in a straight line, not wanting to encourage any further speculation from Charlotte. Well, that's all very interesting, and I thank you for letting me know, she told her sister's friend. Now, I'd better get back to my work. I'll lend you a dress for the occasion, Delia called after her, and we'll do something nice with your hair. It's such a shame she's so plain, Charlotte half-whispered in Eula's wake, but her voice was loud enough for Eula and for her mother, who had just stepped out of the kitchen, to hear. Oh, don't listen to Charlotte's nonsense, Mrs. Rhodes told her youngest daughter. Although she's right about your Bethlehem Star, you should bring that to the festival. That's a quilt that deserves to be seen. Oh, I don't know about making a dinner basket, though, Eula replied. I don't think anyone will actually pay money for such a thing, do you? You might be surprised. A young man will go far out on a limb to impress a girl he's interested in. But who would try to impress me? Eula asked in her straightforward way. I can't think of anyone. Can you? Charlotte could bring a basket with an apple and a slice of bread, and somebody would bid on it. Charlotte's a pretty girl, and I have no doubt she'll marry within a year if she has anything to do with it. But the right man will come along for you, Eula Jean. A good man. Just you wait and see. Eula put a hand on her mother's arm. I don't mind not being chosen. I'm happy where I am. Well, you are right now, her mother agreed. But one day, well, you'll see. One day you'll be ready to go. Eula climbed the stairs back to the boys' room and the three unmade beds. Her mother never said something just to say it, so Eula had to consider that one day she might feel the pull to leave her family and make a home of her own. But as she thought of the young men she knew, she just couldn't imagine any one of them glancing in her direction and thinking, "There she is, the girl for me." And that's just fine, Eula thought, shaking out a sheet and letting it play in the breeze for a moment. But as she pulled the covers tight over the feather ticking, she wondered for the first time if maybe it wasn't fine. Maybe it wasn't fine at all. When Eula woke before dawn on the day of the harvest festival, she immediately began debating whether to attend. The afternoon before, the women had gathered in the church hall to hang their quilts, and Eula's Star of Bethlehem had been given pride of place straight across from the hall's entrance, where everyone would be sure to see it first thing. As she helped the others put up their quilts, Eula had never felt so fussed over in her life, the compliments flying left and right. Even Cornelia Hannigan, who never had a good word to say about anyone or anything, had grumbled that Eula's quilt was fairly passable. Coming from Mrs. Hannigan, there was no higher praise. But tonight would be different, Eula was sure of it. Oh, people would still praise her quilt, but when it came to the picnic baskets, Eula knew her offering wouldn't fare half as well. And not because of what it contained. No, its contents would be highly desirable. Fried chicken, German potato salad, deviled eggs, and chocolate cake, all prepared by two of the county's best cooks, Eula and her mother. And if winning the basket meant carrying it back to where your friends and family had gathered and sharing it, then perhaps Eula's basket would inspire a spirited competition amongst the bidders. But that's not how events would unfold. Once the basket had been won, the winner was to escort its maker to a table and eat the meal with her. Who would sign up for a meal with the plain-faced Eula Rhodes, she wondered. Continuing to anticipate the humiliation of her basket receiving no bids, Eula dressed and made her way to the kitchen, where her mother was pulling a pan of biscuits from the stove. "Get yourself a cup of coffee before you head out to the barn," Mrs. Rhodes told her. We've got a dozen eggs in the bowl and could use a dozen more. I'm glad we got the cake made last night because we've got plenty to do this morning. After breakfast, we'll fry the chicken. I don't think we ought to make the deviled eggs till closer to the time to go. Eula nodded and went to the cupboard. She'd come downstairs resolved to tell her mother about her worries, but now she couldn't bring herself to do it. Her mother already had the day planned out and had probably already decided which chicken to kill. Delia just went out to milk, Mrs. Rhodes continued, as Eula sat down at the table with her coffee cup in hand. She says Charlotte's going to walk over later this morning with all of her things and ride to the church with us this afternoon. I suppose that means the boys will have to walk so that Delia and Charlotte can take the cart. Charlotte can't help but complicate things, can she? Eula said, and though her mother frowned slightly at the remark, Eula knew deep down she agreed. While pleasant enough company, Charlotte seemed averse to any work but needlework, and rarely considered how her actions, such as her decision to spend the day at the Rhodes and ride with them into town, would affect others. I hope she doesn't have anything that needs to go in the icebox, Mrs. Rhodes worried as she pulled out a cast-iron pan from the drawer beneath the stove. There's not much room as it is. If it's an inconvenience, then yes, Eula said, taking a sip of coffee. I'm sure Charlotte will have plenty that needs to be kept cold. As it turned out, Eula was wrong. When Charlotte arrived shortly before the midday meal, she carried an empty basket. Well, I thought Delia could help me make a few things, she explained. If I could steal just a couple slices of ham, and maybe I could boil a few potatoes. Oh, I'm sure anything would be fine, really. Maybe some of those biscuits. Eula had to stop herself from rolling her eyes. Of course Charlotte came with an empty picnic basket and expected someone to fill it for her. At least she didn't need the icebox. Now Eula could make her deviled eggs right after lunch and then work on her Liberty Star quilt until it was time to go. She reckoned 3 more blocks would do it. Then she'd have 10 rows of 8, which she was almost positive would be big enough. Sometimes when she pieced a top together, she'd realized she'd pictured things wrong. But usually she was fairly accurate in her calculations. Later, after she made the deviled eggs and stowed them in the icebox, Eula took her sewing basket up to the room she shared with her sisters and pulled a chair over to the window. During the shorter days of winter and fall, Eula looked forward to sunny Saturday afternoons where she could stitch to her heart's content, her chores done, the light strong over her shoulder. Sometimes Mother would agree to light the lamps at night so Eula could work on a block, but she worried about the strain on her daughter's eyes. Your eyes will give out if you're not careful, was a frequent refrain, one that Eula took seriously as she planned on making quilts until she was 100. Still, wouldn't it be wonderful, she thought, as she pulled out her sewing things and spread them across her bed, if she stayed home alone this evening and sewed by lamplight until her family returned. The house was almost never empty, and it was a rare day indeed that Eula found herself uninterrupted by Delia's chattering or the boys' roughhousing. Mostly she enjoyed being in the middle of her family's cheerful chaos, but the idea of an evening spent alone with her sewing and her thoughts was enticing. Not to mention she wouldn't have to watch her picnic basket go ignored as the bids piled up for the other girls. The very thought of avoiding this public humiliation filled her with such happiness that Eula felt herself on the verge of tears. Well, that was a sign, wasn't it? She almost never cried, and here she was, about to blubber like a baby from relief. An hour later, she descended the stairs and made her way into the kitchen, where her mother was putting together a basket of food for the rest of the family. Supper at the Harvest Festival was always a haphazard affair, no matter how well you planned for it. After the children's poetry recitals and the singing of hymns, a few tables and chairs were pulled into the church hall, and people took turns sitting down to eat. If the evening was nice enough, some took their plates out into the churchyard and ate leaning against the cemetery wall. As baskets were opened and dishes unwrapped, people invariably realized that they'd forgotten to bring forks or had left a pan of cornbread on the table at home, and replacements had to be begged and borrowed. I hope I've made enough chicken, Mrs. Rhodes said as Eula walked into the room. Although who knows what the boys will eat? They'll spend most of the evening running around outside. course, that means they'll come home starving. If they're still hungry later, they can have bread and butter at home, Eula said. Or they can do what they did last year, help clean up at the end of supper and get their fill then. I suppose. How did I ever raise such a wild bunch? Mrs. Rhodes wondered. She glanced over at Eula. You know we're about to leave. You need to go change. Eula dropped into a chair with a sigh. Oh, I don't know, Mother. I'm not feeling all that well. Maybe I shouldn't go. Mrs. Rhodes put her hand on Eula's forehead. Well, you're not warm. Have you got one of your headaches? I might feel one coming on, Eula said, not wanting to lie outright. Mostly I just feel a little strange. You could still take my basket for the auction. But the maker of the basket is supposed to eat with whoever wins it, her mother pointed out. Well, whoever wins it can go sit with his family. It's not like he's going to want to eat with me anyway. What are you talking about, Eula Jean? You're good company. Eula couldn't help but smile. Well, of course you think that. You're my mother. I just think it would be a shame to make a young man eat his dinner alone, Mrs. Rhodes said. It's a dinner basket for two, not one. Eula sensed that victory was nearly hers, but before she had a chance to enjoy it, Charlotte appeared in the kitchen doorway. Well, if Eula's not going, can I claim her basket? She asked. What with everyone else crowding up the kitchen all day, I never had time to do much with mine, and all I've got in there is a few apples and a piece of pie. Well, that's entirely up to Eula. Mrs. Rhodes turned to her daughter. How does that notion sit with you? Maybe if it had been somebody else, anybody else really, Eula would have considered it. But Charlotte? Miss, it's such a shame Eula's so plain? Eula didn't think so. I might just go after all, she told her mother. I'm starting to feel a little better. Well, you could still let me take your basket and call it mine, Charlotte suggested. After all, well, you know. Eula stared at the girl. What do I know? I might not be much of a cook, but I can make lively conversation, Charlotte said with a shrug. What would you talk about? Quilts? Why, what fun would that be for the man who bought your basket? Well, I don't see how that's any of your business, Eula replied. That would be between me and him. Oh, you're right, I suppose. I just thought I'd do you a favor, but if you'd rather I didn't. Eula harumphed and turned to her mother. I'll go get ready. Mrs. Rhodes smiled. I think that would be for the best. By the time Eula and her family arrived at the church, the yard was crowded with men, from old farmers debating whether rain was on its way to young boys swinging from tree branches, all of them waiting until the last minute to go inside and act civilized. Eula's father and her brothers went to join them, while the women of the family, plus Charlotte, made their way inside the hall. The wall-mounted oil lamps had been lit, casting a gentle glow over the room. I hope we don't go up in flames before the evening's over, Delia giggled into Eula's ear. But Eula shushed her. The hall had such a magical feeling, all those quilts lit up by the flickering lights. Eula didn't want it spoiled by her sister's silliness. She began touring the room to admire the quilts they'd hung the day before. Elizabeth Calhoun's Stars Upon Stars quilt, with its many intricate diamonds, was especially fine, and Bessie Stanton's perfectly pieced Irish chain was a beauty. A simple block, to be sure, but Eula knew from experience that simple blocks could demand something extra from a quilter. You had to be smart about the prints you used and the colors you picked, or else your quilt wouldn't be much to look at. Eula was almost done looking at the quilts when a wave of loud voices crashed into the room. That must mean that the men had been summoned inside and the festivities would begin soon. Eula scurried over to where Delia and Charlotte were chatting, near the tables with all of the picnic baskets displayed, including Eula's. What do you think about Nathaniel Baker? Delia was asking Charlotte. I know he's young, but he's handsome. Oh, but he's got those big ears, Charlotte pointed out. If I was going to choose one of those Baker brothers, Dan Baker is the one I'd aim for. Delia shook her head and laughed. Dan Baker is married to his farm. The two of you would bore each other to tears. Well, I disagree. Charlotte turned to Eula. What do you make of Dan Baker? Which one is he? Eula asked, trying to sort out the five Baker boys in her mind. Dan's the oldest, Delia told her, the quiet one who you hardly ever see in town. In fact, I'd be surprised to see him here tonight. You are mistaken, my dear, Charlotte said, clapping in delight. He's over there, admiring Eula's quilt as we speak. Eula, walk over with me. Introducing you to Dan will give me an excuse to strike up a conversation. Eula reluctantly followed Charlotte across the room. As they got closer to her quilt, Charlotte called out, Hello there, Mr. Baker. I'd say that's a fine quilt you're looking at. Dan Baker turned to see who was calling his name. I'm no expert on quilts, he said when Charlotte and Eula reached him, but I like looking at this one. It's got a kind of musical quality to it. A musical quality? Charlotte trilled. What a fascinating observation, Mr. Baker. Well, I've got the quilter who made it right here. Eula, did you have music in mind when you put this together? Eula could feel her cheeks redden. I couldn't say, she began. But then she stopped and thought a moment. I suppose there's a rhythm to it, if you think about it. Dan Baker looked at her and nodded, and Eula couldn't help but notice how friendly his eyes were. That's what I'm trying to say, he told her. There's a way that dark follows light, follows dark. Well, that sounds like a lot of nonsense, I guess. Well, that's not nonsense at all, Eula insisted. That's exactly how I worked it out. Dan considered this for a moment. Do you plan it all out before you begin? Well, I do, but a lot of times I change my mind. The way I see things in my imagination isn't always the way they look in real life. Charlotte pushed her way in between Eula and Dan. Well, this is all quite fascinating, I'm sure. Have you looked at any of the other quilts, Mr. Baker? I'd be happy to show you around. Well, that would be fine, Dan told her. Maybe Miss Rhodes could join us. Charlotte waved away the suggestion. Eula needs to go help her mother, don't you, Eula? Eula considered denying this, especially given that she'd helped hang these quilts and knew a good bit about them, certainly more than Charlotte. But Charlotte's expression left no doubt that she wanted Eula gone. I suppose I should, she told Dan, and the look in his eyes was so sympathetic she wanted to take hold of his hand and not let go. It was good meeting you, Mr. Baker. I enjoyed meeting you too, Dan said, his smile making the corners of his eyes crinkle. He was about to say something else when Charlotte grabbed his arm. We better get moving if we're going to see all the quilts before the children start singing, she told him. I so like this quilt over here, which is a little bit like Eula's, don't you think? Eula watched Charlotte drag Dan in the direction of Elizabeth Calhoun's Stars Upon Stars quilt. She'd never known a man to talk about a quilt the way he talked about Eula's Star of Bethlehem. Frankly, she hadn't realized that men could have those kinds of thoughts. Maybe she'd underestimated them. Then Charlie, Fred, and Frank came barreling past her, and Frank yelled, Graham Wallace found a mouse in the choir loft, and we're going to trap it with a piece of pie. Come to think of it, Eula was pretty sure Dan Baker was one of a kind. The children sang three hymns, Abide with me, 'tis eventide, All things bright and beautiful, and There's a friend for little children. Then the pastor's wife, Hilda Bilby, did a dramatic reading from an excerpt of Robert Browning's Aristophanes' Apology, which proved considerably less popular than the singing, though Eula, knowing what would follow, wished Mrs. Bilby would read until it was time to go home. But no, Mrs. Bilby finished to polite applause and then introduced her husband. Reverend Bilby will now commence with the auction of the baskets, she announced. All interested parties, please move to the front. A contingent of young men quickly formed in front of the long tables where the dinner baskets were displayed. At the same time, Eula moved toward the door. If no one bid on her basket, why, she'd just slip out and begin the walk home. It was a pleasant evening, after all, and the 5-mile walk would do her good. The first basket brought up for auction belonged to Katie Weingarten, and there was some good-natured back-and-forth bidding before John Harrow, long known to be sweet on Katie, won it with the 15-cent bid. Several baskets followed that went for a dime, which people in the crowd seemed to think was about the right price, not so little as to embarrass the basket's maker, but not so much as to seem like a young man was making a fool of himself over a girl and a plate of chicken. "Now, this next picnic basket was put together by Miss Eula Rhodes," Reverend Bilby announced, startling Eula, who wasn't used to hearing her name called out in front of a crowd. "Boys, knowing Eula's reputation as a cook, I had to take a peek inside, and I'm telling you, you won't be disappointed. Who wants to start the bidding?" Eula shrank back in the shadows, anticipating the inevitable silence. Much to her amazement, a voice cried out, 10 cents. "Well, I hear 10 cents, Reverend Bilby repeated to the crowd. "We can do better than that, boys. Did I mention that there's half a chocolate cake in there?" 15 cents, another voice called. Eula found herself trembling. The bidding had started at 5 cents on the other baskets, and it had taken at least a minute for Reverend Bilby to cajole John Harrow to bid 15 cents on Katie's. But here was her basket, up to 15 cents by the second bid. A woman standing near her turned and whispered, "That's Dan Baker. Out of all them boys, nobody likes a good meal better than Dan." There was a moment of silence, and Eula thought that was it. The bidding was over. She felt like she'd spent the day awaiting the gallows, and then not only had been given a reprieve, but a welcome home party to boot. What might she and Dan Baker discuss over their shared basket, she wondered, getting excited by the prospect. Well, she could ask him about his farm, she supposed. It might be too much to expect a further discussion of quilts. Besides, he might think it her only topic of 25 cents, a voice suddenly called out, and a murmur ran through the crowd. While no rules for who could and couldn't bid on the baskets had been established, it was generally understood that this was an opportunity for unmarried young men to show their interest in the unmarried young women of the community. In this case, however, the bidding voice was decidedly that of a female. In fact, Eula was fairly sure it belonged to Charlotte Wiggins. The murmurs died down, and there was another stretch of silence that was finally broken by Dan Baker. 30 cents! A few people clapped, and Mrs. Bilby exclaimed, "My goodness, we'll be able to do the floors at this rate!" 35 cents! Charlotte again. The skin on Eula's palms began to itch. What on earth was that girl doing?
40 cents,
Dan called.
50 cents,
came Charlotte's reply. A second passed, and then Dan yelled,
$1.
Reverend Bilby held up his hands, as though he were trying to stop a brawl from breaking out.
$1? Well, I think that settles it. Miss Eula Rhodes' basket has been sold to Dan Baker for $1.
Cheers erupted throughout the hall, and several people around her smiled at Eula.
"I'd say that man is sweet on you," a woman said, shaking her head in wonder, and Eula shrugged, feeling flustered.
$1?
Dan Baker had bid $1 on her dinner basket, but she didn't even know him. And yes, he had nice eyes and a wonderful smile, but suddenly Eula felt exposed. People would think all sorts of things were going on between her and Dan when they'd only met 30 minutes ago. As Reverend Bilby announced the next basket, Eula slipped outside of the building. The cool air felt good against her hot cheeks. She began to walk. She certainly couldn't stay here, couldn't face Dan Baker, certainly couldn't face Charlotte Wiggins. What had Charlotte been playing at, anyway? Was she trying to win Eula's basket to keep Dan and Eula apart? But why? Up until that evening, Eula had never heard Charlotte mention Dan. He couldn't possibly mean that much to her.
Eula?
Dan Baker appeared behind her on the path. He was carrying her picnic basket.
You do know you're supposed to share this with me, right?
Eula waved him away and began walking faster.
You go on and share it with someone else, she called. Share it with Charlotte. Maybe she'll go halves on it. Eula, wait.
Dan began to trot behind her. She was only bidding to get a rise out of me. Eula stopped and turned to face him.
What do you mean, to get a rise out of you? By this time, Dan was only a few feet away. Charlotte wasn't very happy with me. When we were looking at quilts, she asked me to bid on her basket, and I told her I was going to bid on yours. You did? Eula asked, her eyes wide. Why'd you do that? Well, because I like chocolate cake, Dan said with a laugh. And even though we only talked a little bit, I knew that I'd like to talk to you some more. Anyway, I think I hurt Charlotte's feelings. I wish I hadn't, but she didn't leave me much choice. She's used to getting her way, Eula told him. Not a lot of people tell her no. She made that very clear to me, Dan said, smiling, in subtle and not so subtle ways. So, won't you please come back and eat with me? I know a nice wall we can lean against. I wish you hadn't bid a dollar on me, Eula said, her cheeks burning again. I feel funny about that. Well, I didn't bid a dollar on you. I bid a dollar on your dinner basket, Dan corrected her. A dollar that's going to make some church pews look awfully new and shiny, I might add. But you know what? Eula finally looked Dan Baker straight in the eye. What? Dan grinned. I think it's nice that you're embarrassed. But you know what? What? Eula asked again, this time doing her best not to laugh. I looked inside your basket before the auction began, and I would have paid two, maybe $3. Goodness, girl, where'd you learn to cook? They turned and began walking back to the church. Well, from my mother, where else? Eula told him. She taught me how to fry chicken when I was 10. Now I'm the number one chicken fryer in my family. Oh, the number one chicken fryer, Dan repeated, laughing. That's quite a title. Just you wait and see, Eula said. It's going to be the best fried chicken you ever tasted. Wouldn't surprise me a bit, Dan said. Now, come on, let's go find us a good spot to eat. Eula tried not to mind all the eyes on her as she and Dan made their way through the crowd. Instead, she thought about how strange this day had been and how she might not even be here if not for Charlotte Wiggins calling her plain face 2 weeks ago. And if Charlotte hadn't offered to take Eula's basket to the auction this afternoon, why, Eula would probably be sitting at home right now, finishing up her Liberty Star quilt. As much as Eula liked working on a quilt, she had a feeling that she was going to have an even better time eating dinner with Dan Baker. Eula pulled a plate out of the basket and handed it to Dan. "Let's be sure to save a piece of cake for Charlotte," she told him. "I owe her a favor." "What kind of favor?" Dan asked. "The favor of a lifetime, I'm pretty sure," Eula told him. And as the years would prove, she was right.
A production of Milton Falls Media, Incorporated. All rights reserved. Learn more about the Quilt Fiction podcast online at quiltfiction.com.